Welcome to the True Ballet Podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. Eric, I'm going to let you handle everything else because I have to be writing down a bunch of names. I cheated. I looked ahead at the trivia question, and you're asking me to name a lot of people.
I have a very hard trivia question for you, but a very recent one. I don't delve back into history. Zach Wheat, spoiler alert, not one of the answers in this question. But yeah, we're kind of going over the last week. We'll even cover some of the answers to said question before we get to the question. So I'm giving you a lot of information here, but yeah, a lot of stuff happened last week, or you know, relatively, and that's sort of what we're here to talk about.
All right, so we're gonna catch up on this week. Got our regular segments, you know them, questions from Craig, Dodgers Rewind. We'll have all of that after this. All right, what's first?
Okay, so, you know, obviously, a lot of stuff happened on the baseball field last week. Dodgers won 9 straight. We'll get into that. Just wanted to sort of mention this first since we alluded to it last week. Trevor Bauer had his hearing in Los Angeles Superior Court for a temporary restraining order against him. And it was a hearing to figure out whether that restraining order would last, which I believe under California law would have been up to 5 years. The judge ultimately denied the request for the restraining order. So it wasn't really like a criminal trial. Technically, it was not a criminal trial per se. There's still investigations ongoing from the Pasadena Police Department and Major League Baseball, but that's just sort of where we're at. It doesn't really affect things in that regard, and especially like from a baseball sense. I will say, like, some of the coverage, the hearing we recorded last week on Monday morning, that's when the hearing started. The hearing lasted till Thursday. I believe the petitioner, the woman in question in the restraining order, testified Monday and was interviewed by her attorney, or examined by her attorney, and then cross-examined the next day by the defense. And it's distasteful, like, how a lot of this was like sort of covered like a sporting event, which is gross. Like at a minimum,
LA Times sending a sports reporter, Steve Hansen.
Like just some of the, I don't know, like it's hard. And it's hard to like go day by day. Like, oh man, you know, it's not like, hey, we're coming into the ninth inning, you know, that kind of thing. Not that Steve necessarily mentioned that, but like that's the tone of a lot of the coverage when there's like a sports person on in a courtroom. And I think there's different ways to handle it. And I don't know. I just found that distasteful, not really germane to anything here. I just wanted to mention that. But in terms of the timeline and how it, like for the Dodgers, nothing really changed last week. Bauer's still on administrative leave. They're still sort of extending it week by week with the cooperation of the Major League Baseball Players Association. For the ESPN reporting, Alden Gonzalez and Tisha Thompson on the Bauer case, they mentioned that Major League Baseball is not expected to come to a decision on a suspension for Bauer until legal proceedings are complete. Now, like, Pasadena police still haven't like filed charges. They're still doing an investigation. No one really knows how long that's going to take. MLB also still doing a concurrent investigation. Worth noting that the domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse policy that went into effect in 2015 for Major League Baseball does not require any sort of criminal conviction, arrest, admission of guilt, anything to be suspended. So that's sort of independent of that. So it's not necessarily reliant on things like that. I would say the one thing that was most relevant for our purposes, at least for now, was that the Dodgers have been like remarkably silent on all of this, other than like passively removing like Trevor Bauer like likenesses from the stadium, no like jersey sales or things like that. they haven't really said much. Like, I think I've said a couple times, we've talked about it on the podcast, where it was just sort of disappointing that they didn't even put out, like, a blanket, like, we condemn domestic violence in all forms, or you know, sexual assault, or anything like that. And they still have it, but Stan Kasten apparently sent a memo to team employees last Monday, I believe August 16th. ESPN and the LA Times got a copy of that memo. A couple of quotes from the memo. I'll just read this. This is from those reports. During the past couple of months, we've all been deeply troubled by the allegations that have been made against Trevor Bauer. That was a quote from Kasten. Kasten also said the organization, quote, takes all allegations of this nature very seriously and does not condone or excuse any acts of domestic violence or sexual assault. To me, that's the statement that should have been put out on July 2nd or whenever the MLB put him on administrative leave, or like, I guess June 29th was when the restraining order.
You can't get in trouble for that. And if right, you do, you can do that, right?
At a very minimum, like, yes, we take this seriously. We're not saying anybody is guilty. We do not condone this type of action. That's why we take it seriously. We're not saying anyone did it. Like, that's all you have to say, right? And they didn't do that. But that's in the memo, so at least you have some inkling that there's, like, you know, some decency there. Now, the other part of the memo, Kasten said the reason the Dodgers haven't said anything publicly is because they don't want to interfere with the investigations. MLB and the police, the police less important for this than MLB, but that's sort of why they've been quiet. But I think the bottom line on all this is we're still, like, in the same place we were before. Like, Bauer's not around now. He's been out since July 2nd. If he doesn't pitch the rest of the year, which seems very likely at this point, that would be 81 games out. Who knows how long this is all going to take, but it seems like, given how everyone seems like they're just waiting for other things to happen, it's hard to see this getting resolved in a manner where it would be a position where where Bauer would even pitch for the Dodgers, or, you know, and I guess it gets to the point where would the Dodgers want Trevor Bauer to pitch for them? But that's another topic for another day. Just where we're at right now, it's kind of the same, even with last week's, like, legal proceedings. But yeah, that's kind of it. Just wanted to update that because that was a thing that happened last week. But there were other stuff that also happened on the field, and we'll get into that as well.
So Dodgers got a 9-game winning streak going before finally losing their final game against the Mets.
Yep, they did really well there. Even with the loss on Sunday, I was looking at this because I was looking up something else. The Dodgers are like 16-4 in their last 20 games, and that includes a loss on Sunday. So the 9-game winning streak, it got them to within a game and a half of the Giants. It's now 2.5 because of the loss Sunday. Now, it's funny how this works, right? The Dodgers were, before Buehler's win in New York two Saturdays ago, they were 5 games back. They got to 1.5 back. Now they're 2.5 back. But there was a point on Saturday where it was almost a half game back. And this is where the chasing part becomes frustrating, because it's a lot of times, you know, we tend to think of the baseball season as like a very slow, like, glacial pace, but sometimes the movement happens very quickly. Like, it just you can make up ground in a very short amount of time, but then sometimes you're like, okay, it's really hard to make up that amount of ground because just things happen. So the Dodgers when they won their 9th straight, the Giants were down in the 9th inning against the A's, playing roughly the same time. I forget which ended first. But then they got a 2-run home run Saturday to win that game. So instead of a half game back, it's still a game and a half. And then the Giants were down again on Sunday, got a 2-run home run in the 8th inning to win that game. And so, like, you know, a lot of things could have happened, the woulda, coulda, shoulda type stuff, but that's sort of the nature of a pennant race, and that's you know, what makes it fun, too. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of weird. Did you see, or I guess, what did you think of the Los Dodgers all-blue uniforms that they wore on Friday and Saturday?
We texted a bit about this. The tops were fine, if not a little boring. You know, they're not that different from their spring training uniforms. Obviously, the lettering and the team name being different. But the pants and the hat, I'm just not for me. The all-blue is just, it's weird.
All blue was weird, but the hat was the worst part. Like, it was the same logo as, or not, you know, same lettering as the name, but also it was stacked on top of each other rather than Los Dodgers all in one shot. But it seems too busy for the hat, but I don't know. It was a little weird. I guess I don't, my biggest thing over the years, I used to hate the idea of even trying a blue top with the Dodgers, right? I over the years I've come to the realization that, well, A, it's just not for me, so like, who cares, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. I'm not as diligent on that, but I wouldn't mind them wearing the occasional blue alternates on the road with gray pants. I think that works well. The one thing I'm glad they didn't do was blue tops with white pants, because I don't really like that necessarily. Now, it did look weird with blue on blue. I think part of it was they didn't have a good sock to go with it, like, because some of the players did high pants, or I guess high socks as it were, and they were like white with I forgot what was at the, there was like a something red at the bottom. And it just made it look weird. Like, I think if you had a better sock with it, like, it might have mattered. But also, when it first came out, they first sort of unveiled it before Friday, Saturday. It, from afar, it looked like velour or like pajamas, like in a weird way, which was kind of fun. But yeah, I don't know. It was fine generally. Like, it, obviously, it's different. It's just weird, but. I get, it wasn't so bad. I just didn't like the hats mostly.
Yeah.
But you know, while wearing the blue on Saturday, first I guess earlier in the week, Billy McKinney homered against the Pirates. On Saturday, Trey Turner homered against the Mets. So I like when we have a lot of the bets we have, we don't, forget about.
Yeah, they don't come to fruition until months later.
Yeah, this one was like instant. Like, here's our
bet. I believed in Billy McKinney.
Jacob wins. Yeah, and so look, I salute you on that. So at the time last week, there were 19 Dodgers with a home run. The question from Craig was, you know, how many would it be, like 20 or 21 or more? I said 20. That only one of Turner and McKinney would homer. I didn't think McKinney would homer. He homered immediately, and then Trey Turner homered, and then so. You won this bet like before the next episode, so that's the way to do it. And it's 21 and counting. Like, there could be more. Like, you also had the obviously there's like I actually hope like multiple pitchers do now just make it a runaway like that at this point. It's pretty good. I think one of the things too last week we sort of forget about. Andre Jackson actually made his major league debut last week. Like, there's a lot of stuff that happened, but that was on Monday. He was a bolt guy pitching after an opener. He pitched four scoreless innings, pitched really well, and then was optioned the next day because the Dodgers are churning through players. They also had Wednesday of that series against the Pirates, the Mitch White game, and he pitched 7 1/3 scoreless
turns
innings.
Turns out the trick to Mitch White is just let him go.
yep, exactly. Just wind him up and then let him go. Well, there was a point in the second inning, I guess after the first inning, when he was warming up in the bullpen, then he was ready, and he was just sitting on a chair, just completely relaxed and, like, zoned out. And, like, the Sportsnet LA cameras caught him, and he's just totally relaxing, just sitting there. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be a good game for him. But yeah, 7 1/3, scoreless. I'm going to leave this for a second, but it was the longest relief outing. You already know the answer, but we'll talk about it in a second. Longest relief outing in 37 years by a Dodger. Following an opener. But yeah, like it was one of those where the bullpen was taxed. They needed a reset day, and that totally gave them a reset day, so it was good. So we're going to get to this sort of question in a while, in a little bit, but just to give you some answers, last week, 4 new Dodgers pitchers pitched for the team this year. Andre Jackson on Monday made his major league debut. Evan Phillips, who they claimed off waivers, was the 35th pitcher used by the team. Naftali Feliz and Shane Green pitched on Sunday. They were the 36th and 37th pitchers used by the Dodgers. So I'm giving you easy answers here for a later question. The previous Dodgers record was 31 pitchers. So they've already blown past that. The surprising thing to me, or not surprising because I looked it up earlier, but they're only tied for third in the majors. Like they were, and it, you know, when it was 33 or 34, they were like eighth. So because of the going from 60 to 162, like there's, you know, pitching is weird this year for that. There's been a lot of injuries, but then, you know, just how teams use rosters too. 17 major league teams this year have already used 30 or more pitchers. That's crazy. The all-time record is 42 pitchers. I think it's the 2019 Mariners. I can't remember which Mariners team it was. I think it was 2019. The average this year in Major League Baseball is just over 34 pitchers per team. So it's not just the Dodgers. The Dodgers are certainly using a lot, but it's a lot. It's a lot of pitchers. So speaking of a lot of pitchers, I was looking this up because the Dodgers, we'll talk about the upcoming schedule in a second. They're playing the Padres this week in San Diego, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We're recording this on Tuesday morning. The Padres have actually used their bullpen more than the Dodgers of late. They've had, like, Yu Darvish hurt. I believe he's going to pitch in one of the games in the series. He's still on the IL. Chris Paddock has been hurt. The Padres relievers in August have pitched 57% of the innings, and they're doing a bullpen game on Tuesday. Pierce Johnson is starting, one of the great baseball names ever. baseball names / tattoo artist. That's a lot of pitchers used, and we'll get to that more of that in a second. Now this series in San Diego could be sort of a return series for quite a few people. Julio Urias, the Dodgers haven't officially announced this yet, but he's going to be activated off the injury list to start this opener on Tuesday, meaning he only missed one start and the minimum 10 days on the injured list with his left calf thing that he got hit by a pitch. So that's like relatively good news. Joe Kelly, who's been on the COVID IL for, I believe he missed 13 games. He pitched 2 rehab games for Rancho Cucamonga. He's supposed to be back possibly tonight, at least at some point during the series. But perhaps the most important, Mookie Betts, who has been on the injured list twice since the All-Star break with, I guess a bone spur in his hip. He could return as early as Thursday. He did a simulated game, simulated game Monday, and I believe he was going to do another one today at Dodger Stadium, off Wednesday, and then join the Dodgers in San Diego on Thursday to be activated if all goes well. Now, we've talked about this, how full strength doesn't really exist. Dave Roberts, when asked about it the other day, he said, "My anticipation is tempered because of what we've gone through this year." He was like half joking, but it's also true. They've had, since the trade, they've had one lineup with their like full like complement of players.
It was a really good game, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, yeah, and so they're not quite there yet, but they're close. They still got a pretty darn good lineup even without Betts, but it gets obviously a whole lot better. The other, I guess, sort of generally, like Clayton Kershaw, he's been playing like a lot of catch recently, throwing at 120 feet, then like 150 feet. he's supposed to maybe get off of a mound this week, maybe a couple of times, maybe a bullpen session soon. His earliest return date, September 5th, would imagine he's going to start having to pitch off of a mound to sort of get ready for that. But like, it looks like just given the schedule, at a minimum, they probably have to have at least two more like fill-in starts from either Andre Jackson or Mitch White, like two more times until Kershaw or Gonsolin is ready, possibly three more times, who knows. But that's just sort of where they're at right now. I was looking at the remaining schedule because the Dodgers haven't played the Padres in 2 months. They have 9 games left against the Padres. This is their last series in San Diego. The other two later in the year are at home. And then the Dodgers only have 3 against the Giants in September. They have 12 games left. The Dodgers do against the bottom two, Diamondbacks, Rockies. The Giants have 10 games against the Padres and 3 against the Dodgers, and then they have 9 against the bottom two. Why the Padres have the Padres are currently out of a playoff spot right now because they've been falling like a rock. The Reds have been hot, and they're ahead of them by a game now for the second wild card spot. But also the Padres are, what is it, I think 10.5 games behind the Dodgers and 13 games back of the Giants. Part of it was because they've played all but 3 games against the Diamondbacks and Rockies. So they only have, I think they have 3 games left against the Rockies, if I'm not mistaken. And they are 17 and 19? I forgot what it was.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they're under 500.
They were 500, then they lost at least one more time and maybe twice.
Yeah, so I think it's, in fact, I have it here. Yeah, okay, so they're, yeah, let's just pretend I know what I'm talking about. And, yeah, 17 and 18, looks like.
Aha.
Yeah, so they're bad against those. The Giants are 23 and 6. The Dodgers are 21 and 5. So that gives you an idea of how the Padres have sort of slipped back a little bit. But, yeah, that's sort of where, you know, they are at. I was looking at, too, the Fangraphs odds still have the Dodgers winning the division, like a little more than 60%, I think, maybe not quite 2/3% chance. But even like the projected wins, I think they're like maybe a win over the Giants, or maybe a little bit more than a win. So it's still going to be close, obviously, down the stretch. The remaining win percentage of the Dodgers' opponents is 508. For the Giants, it's 520. So, you know, it's a little bit more difficult for the Giants, but not appreciably so. But that was all just a ruse to give you more time to think of the answer to our trivia question, which you knew about ahead of time.
I did.
The Dodgers have used 37 pitchers, as I mentioned before. In 2021, that's a franchise record. How many of the 37 pitchers can you name?
Not 37, I'll say that much. I will answer that after this.
I have confidence in you.
Dodgers have used 37 pitchers this year. How many can I name? How many do you think I can name?
I think you'll get... I think you'll get 30.
See, that's what I was going for, and I'm stuck at 28. We're so in the well, I keep it like Pedro Baez entered my head. I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, right. No, that was last year. Tug deep. And then there are a couple of names where I'm like, I have fragments of information and I just don't remember the name. So we'll go through what I know. And I'll preface this by saying I'm guessing I'm missing like 5-ish names of like, yeah, I have no problem not remembering that 1 or 2 outing performance.
Yeah. There's always going to be one where you're like, ah.
Yeah, no, like, I am positive I'm missing 1 or maybe even 2 like currently on the roster. And I just... slip, you know, my brain is just dead.
Yep.
And then there'll be a 3 where like, maybe if I thought longer. All right, let's go.
Yep.
Leading off this illustrious list, Quackenbush.
Mm-hmm. You went right with the big guns early. I like it.
Clayton Kershaw, basically. 1 and 2, right?
That's right.
This is where if you do a Sporkle quiz and like,
yeah,
there's a bunch of options and two of them like share something, you can get multiple. I'm going to say green.
Green. Yeah. Okay. I will give you both Connor and Shane.
Brule.
Yep.
Bueller.
Yep. Bickford. I'm physically writing these down just so I'm like, make sure I know who you missed.
I have a question. How many do you think you would have gotten?
I think I would have got all 37.
No.
But I even offered to you before I
to
like,
swap.
Up, like, yeah, do you want to ask me?
You and I, so a little behind the scenes curtain, the original trivia question I would have gotten right because you tweeted about it. And because I thought it was going to be that trivia question, I thought about asking you this very question, name the 37, right afterwards, since it would have been a very quick trivia segment. And then I just said, nah, that's too much time. And then we started record, or right before recording, you mentioned, I swapped it out, by the way.
it might have taken me, because I would have also like forgotten probably a few, and then so I would have like gotten to 35 and then be like, I don't know who
35, 35 and a half is where I was going to set my over under for you for what it's worth. Bueller,
so
I said
Bickford and Bueller,
Scherzer,
yep,
Gonsolin, May,
yep,
Jojo,
yep,
Urias,
yep,
Gonzalez,
yep,
White,
yep,
Gratterall,
yep,
Price,
yep,
Trinan, Kenley, Kelly,
yep,
Knable,
all the K's, yep,
yeah, Bauer,
yep,
Santana.
Oh man, see, that's a good one, but yes, obviously,
Yuseta,
yep,
Vesia,
yep,
Feliz.
Ooh, nice.
Andy Burns.
Beautiful.
Jackson.
Yep.
Phillips. So does Andy Burns count? Is this people who have made a pitching?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't sure if this was people technically pitcher on the roster or whatever. Okay. Yep. And this is where I hit the like Bobby something I have written down.
I'll get to him after.
Okay.
I'll tell you he is not one. But okay. I'll go get into why he at least is worth
it. And then I have a waiver choir that pitched well against Giants and then DFA'd week later. I just can't.
Oh yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right on that description.
Technically,
I knew. So I have you at 28 right now.
My brain's done. Like that's
okay.
That's where I stopped.
Now, I will say, I'll give you a couple hints that aren't okay. Arguably, the Dodgers' best reliever this year. You're missing.
I am
actual reliever, not like you know one game.
Person. See, this is why. Like, this is clearly a blind spot. And brain is now just going.
I will say the next couple I'm going to ask you, they're all on the injured list.
Oh. Okay. I'm going to, arguably. Eighth starter.
that's also right for this person.
Jimmy Nelson.
That's right.
Behind the scenes, we just took a minute break so I would remember Jimmy Nelson's name. You had to give me a first initial. And this is why I was afraid of this question, is that like I'm not going to forget Clayton Kershaw and like Kenley Jansen, but below that, my brain could just forget a name despite remembering everything else about a particular player.
Whew. Okay.
All right. And then
I'm glad I wrote these down because I have the others that you missed.
Okay.
These other two are also on the DL or IL, excuse me. One of them has four extra inning losses this year.
Nope. I'm tapping out. My brain.
Okay.
If it takes me a minute, remember Jimmy Nelson's name, my brain has been stretched to its limits. Embarrassed. Go ahead.
That was Garrett Clevenger.
Sure.
Also another lefty, Scott Alexander.
Yep. And that was another thought in my head. Is like, I'm missing lefties. I know I'm missing lefties.
the waiver guy who pitched well against the Giants was Nate Jones.
Yeah.
Another waiver guy.
No way I remember these. Like, it's so funny how the brain works, or in this case, doesn't.
another waiver guy who's since moved on to two other teams via waivers and whose wife won a silver medal at the Olympics on softball, Jake Reed.
Mm-hmm.
Another waiver pickup, Jimmy Sherpy, is on the 60-day IL. He's out for the year. Mike Kickham was up for a day.
I should have remembered Mike Kickham. All right.
Pitched in Milwaukee. Yeffrey Ramirez was optioned without options. Darian Nunez has a good changeup, and he's been up and down the last month and a half.
Yep.
Okay. But yeah, that's you did well. Like, it's always going to happen that way where there's
Clevinger,
like an obvious
I think
name.
Was in the same space as Jimmy Nelson of like
yeah.
been all tons of performances and just tucked away in the part of my brain where couldn't access it,
but
couldn't get it.
In fairness, out of sight, out of mind too. Like Jimmy Nelson hasn't pitched for over 3 weeks. He's been away, you know, like hasn't been, like, there's been no cutaways.
And it's really interesting you said arguably best just because of how good the bullpens have been lately. And that's where I was like, wait, really?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they've been getting such stellar performances out of Trinan and out of Vesia that, like I can't, I apparently, this is one of those things that new parents, quote unquote new, get to blame being a new parent for like, 20 years, I think. So I'm just going to keep doing that. I was up late watching the kid.
In fairness to you, since you nailed this trivia question off air before we started, my original question was going to be who had Mitch White, 7 1/3 innings, who had the last relief appearances by a Dodger at least that long or longer?
And it was Bert Hooten.
That's correct. 1984, he went 8 innings.
And allowed like one run, I think. And that's where I was getting mixed up because there's another trivia question and name I'm forgetting now.
Yeah, the other one was Mitch White had the longest scoreless relief appearance of that long since Ed Roebuck in 1960.
Right.
Nine scoreless innings of relief in a 10-inning game against the Milwaukee Braves.
You got to make Sears puns. I remember now.
I did make a Sears pun on Twitter with that. So my usual thing, sometimes I tweet stuff like a couple days and I'm like, I wonder if Jacob saw that. I'll just ask it anyway, because sometimes you don't, and so like it's a tricky situation where I have to guess whether you've seen it or not.
No, and when you guess correctly, they're always, if you're tweeting it out, it ends up being a really good trivia question. So now in that case, would I have gotten? Obviously, I wouldn't have known.
But
if you had like
given
me an era, would I have like?
Yeah.
I think Bert Hooten would have been somewhere in the punch bowl, maybe. But
I don't. I think it would have taken a long time to
I think
like
that would have been a very fun trivia question for like you and me sitting at a bar. So I have half an hour to throw names at you. Not for our listening audience.
Side note: before we get into the Dodgers rewind, my niece's husband, big baseball trivia guy, will text back and forth. If he sees a really awesome trivia question, he'll like throw it my way and I'll try to guess it. Last night, so I misread what he wrote at first. The question was, which player had 93 career home runs has the fewest home runs for anyone who's hit a home run against all 30 major league teams? And my immediate thought was it has to be like a middle infielder type, you know, or something like that. And I didn't get it, but I missed the part where he said he had only gotten to the number two answer, but didn't know the answer. So like once he got, he like was giving me hints. I was like guessing a bunch of people. I didn't get it. And he got me to David Bell because at a certain point he's like current major league manager. So David Bell was number two. And then he's like, oh wait, I don't, I'm like, well, okay, who's number one? He goes, no, I don't know it. So I just, while we were talking, texting, I looked up all the players with 93 career home runs, and it became obvious who it was, and it was Orlando Hudson. And then I turned the tables on him, and I was giving him like clues here and there. It was a fun time. We had a good hour. And that hour, I will say, he perfectly texted me right as I was about to do a little bit of research on today's Dodgers Rewind, who is Frank Lankford. Not to be confused with Ray Lankford, the hitter for the Cardinals in that same era. So this year, the Dodgers have used a lot of pitchers. I was looking up, you know, using a lot of pitchers is like a recent phenomenon, as in like this century for the most part. I think, what is it? I think it's like 22 out of 20, the top 27 or 23 out of the top 28 have been like since 2000 in terms of most pitchers used in franchise history. Only five times before 2000 did they use 20 or more pitchers. 1944, which was during World War II, so it's a little understandable. And then 1990, 95. I would say 90 was a lockout year. 95 was after a strike. And then 99 was, you know, basically 2000. Those had 21 each. Now, 1998 had 25 pitchers, which was the team record until all the way till 2013. So that's it for a while. That was also a tumultuous year. Obviously, Mike Piazza was traded, ownership change, all that kind of stuff. They were cycling through players, kind of going through a bunch of stuff. So Frank Lankford, that December of 97, was a Rule 5 pick from the Yankees. He was age 27. They basically used him in entirely low leverage situations. He was like the last option guy, reliever used. He was sort of early Clevinger this year in a way. On April 2nd, in the 12th inning in St. Louis, he gave up a walk-off three-run home run to Mark McGwire. It was home run number 2 out of 70 that year for McGwire. Lankford also lost a game in the 13th inning later. Those were his two losses. He also got a three-inning save. One might ask, did I only use Frank Lankford to have someone who had a three-inning save as a Dodgers rewind? Yes. Yes, I did. It was a game at Wrigley Field. He entered up 9, 11-2. He gave up a run in three innings, got a save. Perfectly earned save, if you ask me. He allowed 13 runs and 23 hits in 19 and two-thirds innings. He had a 5.95 ERA. He was sent back to the Yankees on May 15th. Many people perhaps didn't notice it because the shockwave was still reverberating from one day earlier when the Dodgers traded Mike Piazza to the Marlins. When they sent Lankford down, it made room for Denys Reyes to be called up from Albuquerque. So Lankford never pitched in the majors again. He did stick around through the end of 2002, basically pitching in AAA all those years. A lot of those were with Oakland, in the Oakland system after the Yankees. So yeah, that's where we're at now. I have a Lankford trivia question for you.
Alrighty.
He was one of four pitchers that year to allow a home run to Mark McGwire in 1998. Dodger How many pitchers. Of the other three can you Dodgers pitchers?
Hit 70 yes. off four dudes.
Just bring in somebody else. Yeah, no. So four different Dodgers pitchers allowed home runs to Mark McGwire in his 70 home run season.
Was this the year he hit one out? Out?
Good question. I think so. But I will look it up while you
hit out
pontificate.
Of Dodger Stadium. Because I was at that game.
Whoa.
Rare feats. Why don't you give me the year? Oh, there you go. It was not. 99 was the year. I was 99, so I was older than I would have thought, 13.
When McGwire settled for 65 home runs.
Yeah, but I, you know, again, certainly wasn't in enough baseball to really realize how rare that, oh, he hit it out of the park, cool, you know, that's what they say, he hits it out, that happens all the time, that's what a home run is.
Yep.
And then my parents were like, no, that was rare. Stalling, isn't that cool? How about I wrote down Rudinsky. How about that?
Scott Rudinsky. Yeah. No. Now here's a funny thing. I was thinking about the 98 team. I was gonna just be simple and say who led the 1998 Dodgers in wins. Then I was thinking name every pitcher who had a save for the 1998 Dodgers. Rudinsky
would you
have
do
qualified.
That
you know, just that's then I stopped because I'm like, he doesn't know any of these players. Well, you said Scott Rudinsky, but like it would have just been a lot of like you know. So I think he would have got the wins, perhaps.
All right,
it would have been like a 50-50 shot.
I'm naming hitting the home runs. Hideo Nomo.
No.
Chan Hoe Park.
No. He was most wins, by the way.
Valdez.
Nope. I'll give you a hint. One of these players was a recent Dodgers Rewind.
I don't know if that helps. Like, I'm listening. I'm out doing puzzles or something while you're talking. Ramon Martinez.
The first home run of the season for McGuire. Grand slam on opening day.
Hey, I got one. I'm feeling pretty good.
I mean, technically, you should get two.
Oh, so it's the question is how many of the other three I get.
Okay, so. All right. I'm giving you two out of four so far.
Are the other two relievers?
One is, and one is a starter.
Is this
both in the same game?
Are the are we early enough for Darren Dreyfurt?
We are.
Is he one of them?
Nope.
Ah, you jerk. I have one more name, and I'm tapping out. Andy Ashby.
Nope. I will tell you. That year, McGuire did hit home runs off Mike Morgan, but he was a Cub, and Oral Hershiser, but he was a Giant, though that never happened. but the other two home runs against the Dodgers were on July 17th at St. Louis. Brian Bohannon, recent, he was a trade acquisition that year. Mm-hmm. And then Antonio Osuna in the same game.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I'm comfortable with half.
Yeah, you did. You did
37. Good. You really think you would have got, like, with no prep, right? If I had just, like, cold asked you, you would have gotten an all 37?
I think so.
Man.
I'm certain I would have had a blunder where I would have missed someone like Jimmy Scherfe or something.
Yeah, that is actually the name I was thinking of. Like, there's no way. like I said, I would have set 35.5 and I would have taken the over, but I would have thought for sure you missed one. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I get to turn the tables in another way with friend from my help.
what?
Craig, because it's time for
Questions from Craig.
We love them.
Screwed it up. I was about to come in and you actually beat me to it. I have to adjust my timesheet. All right, adjusted. The Dodgers play their final three regular season games at Petco Park this week. So this week's trivia questions are all about their historical play at that ballpark. Great ballpark, by the way.
Yep.
As I hope all our listeners know. Should go to a game there when you feel safe to do so.
But I love that park. It's so good.
It's awesome. But first, I wanted to hear about a memorial game experience either of you had going to Petco Park. My first experience at Petco Park was not for a Dodgers game, nor was it for a Padres game. It was actually the semifinals and final of the first World Baseball Classic.
Oh, that's
which
really good.
Means it was also my first introduction to Japanese and Korean baseball fandom, and it was
so good.
Awesome. Because the semifinal was Korea versus Japan.
Oh, man.
And it was so cool. If I remember correctly, and it was long enough ago that I may not, but I seem to recall the Korean team supporters were a little bit more organized. Like, they were handing out thunder sticks. They had chants ready to go. It was so cool. Routine outs got giant cheers. That was a really, really fun experience. And as we mentioned, great park. We had pretty good seats. So, a really, really good experience.
That's solid. When I worked in real estate, my boss had good seats at Petco for a while. So, occasionally, I would get those. They were in the Toyota Terrace section, which is like the sort of the club level, like just above field. And it was like right behind home plate, just to the first base side of home plate, at like the first section there. So there were a lot of like foul balls like that actually got really close to there. Never got one. But sat there a lot, went to a lot of games. There's been a lot of memorable Dodger games. I had a streak when I lived in San Diego. I think I saw the Dodgers lose to the Padres something like 12 straight times. I think like 10 of those were in San Diego and maybe two in LA. But like it was brutal for a while. This was like the PV good Padres era. And but like I so what one of my memorable Petco Park experiences, though, well, A, aside from the time when we had the True Blue LA section in 2009 for Manny's return game on July 3rd, that was fun. But one thing was, I think this was 2006. The Mets were playing the Padres, and then Julio Franco hit a home run for the Mets. And I was telling everybody in my section, and they were like, who is this guy talking to us? But I was telling everyone that he just set a record for the oldest guy in Major League history to homer. I was like yelling it out, you know, like, this is a big deal. Like, and then they finally showed it on like the board, like pretty soon after that. And I was like, vindicated. But no, he was like 46, I think, years old at the time. He went on to hit more, I believe.
We didn't even mention the Pujols Rich Hill home run. The two oldest people in baseball facing
off.
Yeah,
that's right. Both 41. It was fun because so Pujols, since he turned 40 before the start of 2020, Rich Hill was the first 40-year-old pitcher he faced since then. And then also, Pujols is the first 40-year-old or more or older batter to hit a home run off a 40-year-old or older pitcher, a Dodger. So yeah, that was something. And plus the old friends factor and all that. It was really good. And like you mentioned, the two oldest players in baseball. So that was a fun little moment.
All right, enough stalling. Time to put you through the ringer. Five Dodgers. We got four questions. Five Dodgers have hit seven or more home runs in their careers at Petco Park. Can Eric name them? Two are still active Dodgers.
So, Jock Peterson.
Yep, with eight home runs.
Bellinger?
Nope.
Max Muncy?
Nope.
Wow, okay. So, Justin Turner then?
Justin Turner, one of the three with seven.
And then I guess Corey Seager?
Nope.
No, he would have been... All right.
All right.
Wow, this is disappointing. I am angry. There's still one other active Dodger that I'm missing?
That is correct.
Well, this is stupid. all right. I don't know... How? this is a lot. Oh, Chris Taylor.
There you go. Of course. And another one with seven. The two, you have two left.
Yep.
I'll let you know, both at one point Padres.
So Matt Kemp.
With nine.
Let's see.
One very known for being a Padre.
Oh, yeah, so Adrian Gonzalez, yep. I guess.
There you go. Yep.
Nice.
There are four Dodgers with 12 or more doubles in their career at Petco Park. Who are these players? Two are active as Dodgers.
So going back to the well with Justin Turner.
Yes, 12 doubles.
And then I'll go Chris Taylor again.
No.
This one I will... Then circle back. Oh, Corey Seager.
There you go. I was about to say, go with the man we associate with doubles.
Yeah.
Leads the list with 17 doubles.
Uh-huh. And then, so I have two more.
Yep.
Yasiel Puig.
Nope.
Matt Kemp.
Yep, with 14. He's tied with Andre Ethier. Yep, both with 14. Four Dodgers have eight or more stolen bases. Can Eric name these three base thievers? Says Craig. I like that
term.
It's
hard to say. Yeah,
it is hard to say. Hint: the top Dodger went 11-for-11.
This is wow. This is at Petco.
At Petco.
Let's go back to Chris Taylor.
Nope. No active Dodgers on this list.
Matt Kemp.
With eight, with four caught stealings.
Yasiel Puig didn't steal a lot, but I'm going to say Yasiel Puig.
Nope.
I didn't mean it. Petco. Juan Pierre.
one of your hints was going to be Arena in a Box, one Pierre, eight stolen bases with one caught stealing.
So the 11 for 11 guy. Wow. Rafael for call.
There you go. 11 nice. For 11. And you have one left.
Oh.
Sorry.
Wait, I do?
Yeah, it's four. You named for call, Kemp, and Pierre.
Oh, dang. I thought I had another one for some reason. You said not active.
This is not a surprising name when it comes to stolen bases.
Yeah.
A burner, as you would say.
Sure. But, This is a problem. Kenny Lofton, he was only 1 year, but nope. Who knows? Maybe he went off. Honestly, I don't know.
D. Strange Gordon.
Ah, that's good. Yeah.
Switching to the other side of the ball with pitchers, four Dodgers have struck out 50 or more Padres at Petco Park in their time in Los Angeles. Can you name the pitchers?
Yeah, so Kershaw.
You know what's funny is I almost said it's good that we're not including Brooklyn players on this Petco Park list. Clayton Kershaw has 132 strikeouts of Padres at Petco Park.
Okay, so
leads the list, would you believe?
Yeah, I would believe that. So 50 or more
Dazzy strikeouts.
Vance. Just for longevity, and you know, the jersey factor, Chad Billingsley.
Chad Billingsley, number two with 80.
Okay, so now becomes, see, last year was a shortened year. So basically you have Bueller with like 4 years, but like it's really three plus something. And Greinke with three. Which one of those would be on this? Not yet.
Neither.
yeah. Okay. I was talking myself through that. Okay. So let's think of. So Derek Lowe was here for 4 years, but he didn't really strike anybody out. But is 4 years enough? And why am I not thinking of any other? Oh boy!
I have hints if you need them.
I'll take a hint.
One of these. This is a big hint. But one of these players, if my memory serves correctly, hit a home run at Petco Park.
Oh, Kenta Maeda.
There you go. 54 strikeouts.
Oh, then let's go back to the well then, and he's in that same thing, probably like 4 to 5 seasons. So let's go with Hyunjin Ryu.
Nope. My last hint will be these are not exclusively starting pitchers.
Oh, and Kenley.
There you go. 65 yeah. strikeouts.
I should have thought of that. Yeah, good call. Thank you.
Those are good questions. I like that.
Yeah, I like it too.
Walker Buehler is in the conversation for the National League Cy Young Award. What has impressed the two of you the most about his season so far?
The tight pants? It's pretty cliche, but like it's been brought up so much, but it really is like the consistency. Like look back to last season, right? He's obviously their number one.
Couple of years have really shown to me like just how much the Dodgers value their own evaluations. Like it just like maybe yeah. even 10 years ago, maybe a little further back. But where like he was always really inconsistent-ish, mm-hmm. you know, still good, but always inconsistent in the regular season. And I think, you know, it would have been really easy for a management team to go, no, we're going to get the grinder who's been there. And for them to say, no, this guy is starting over Clayton Kershaw, yeah. and we're going to put him and get him in more frequently and make sure we optimize the amount of time we have with him shows, one, how much they trust their internal evaluations, and two, how accurate they are, because they were right.
I think, too, last year, obviously there were the blister issues. Mm-hmm. There was the not throwing during the break and, like, uneven, like, coming out of it. So he basically first few weeks of the season were like spring training almost for him. And so you really didn't know what you're going to get. I think he went six innings once in the regular season last year. This season, every game but one, six innings. Like, and a lot of them, much more. I think the only person with more innings is Zach Wheeler. And, like, it's really, like, I think Zach Wheeler's probably, like, the leader for the Cy Young right now.
Agree.
But Buehler's right there. And, yeah, like, he's just been, like, day in, day out, like, the every day, or, I mean, every fifth day or whatever, reliable post, and just someone they can absolutely count on. And that's, and, like, it's been weird too, because like his strikeout rate is like down a little bit, but it's not like he's giving up hard contact, right? He's been super efficient, and you know, it's not like he's not, maybe not technically pitching to contact, but he is a little bit. But like, you know, I think he's very smart and very in tune with like sort of modern pitching philosophy, and so he's kind of like a perfect fit for like everything every pitching staff's trying to do right now, and like he knows exactly how to do like what they want to do and what he wants to do, and it's just all coming together. And like his postseason record like speaks for itself. For all the like flack like Clayton Kershaw got, Buehler's been like the exact opposite of that. Like, you know, to start his career, like he's been absolutely nails like during the postseason, and like there's a good reason why they sort of consider him as their ace. And like he's been I'm trying to remember the exact quote. Justin Turner has said it, Dave Roberts has said some version of it, but it's like, we knew he was a big game guy. Oh, yeah, this was Justin Turner. It was like, we knew he was a big game guy, but this year he's been the not big game guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, just like everything in between. Like, and so every game has been like a big game performance from him, and like he's been just awesome. And like, that's been really impressive to me.
Really good Fangraphs article by Carmen Ciardello. I think I'm saying that right. But
yeah, I'll link to that in the notes.
That kind of goes over this. And then Jay Jaffe also had a tweet noting the Fabian Ardaya article. Man, I'm naming lots of names. That Buehler himself said that he's focusing more efficiency. And you can see that. And that kind of, you know, it's a mentality shift. We saw Clayton Kershaw go through. You see so many pitchers who have a full arsenal and a really great understanding from the game, but also were blessed with a great action on their pitches naturally, that as, whether it's age or for whatever reason, they need to kind of progress as an actual pitcher. And when you see those guys do that, it's just so cool to see, and gives you a lot of hope for the long term of that pitcher. That you're not just going to get this like great 5-year period that you could get an all-time career out of this guy. And that's really exciting to see, as you know, the Dodgers are going to have a lot of free agent decisions to make, and he has always been on there. And you always wonder, you know, with the pitcher's break mantra, how likely they would be to go after a non-Clayton Kershaw pitcher and lock him up long term. And really does seem like it'd be silly to not have that be Buehler, be the kind of your target A for who you're going to really lock up super long term.
Yep, absolutely.
The 2021 Dodgers have 24 different pitchers with at least one game finished. The LA Dodger franchise record is 25, which was done in 2018. For the contest, Eric can choose first. Boo! Thought we had an understanding. Will this year's team finish with 24, tie the record, or get 26 or more pitchers with a game finished? Note that there are two non-starters on the active roster without a game finished. Ooh, Shane Green and Neftali Feliz.
So Shane Green could have got a game finished on Sunday, but he was bad. He's very bad in his Dodgers debut. So, wow. I think they'll get to 25.
Okay.
But not 26.
Okay. We're 24. No more. That's it.
Staying okay, pat. So this is one that you, only I can win yes. before the end of the season.
Correct.
So next week, I'm going to be like, ha-ha, Natalie Feliz.
Trey Turner got a game finished.
But then also, like, to be fair, like, then they're going to get, like, a 26, too, so, yep. like, neither of us win. So, yeah. All right.
This seems risky nice. To discuss, given the Dodgers' overall health this season. But if Mookie Betts is available this week, the Dodgers would have to make a tough lineup choice every day in terms of who to play and who to sit. My first question, what is your preferred lineups lineups and positions for a fully stocked Dodger team? And second, how often, if at all, does Betts play second base?
Ideally, Betts never plays the infield.
Right.
For me, like, they have enough infielders now. So, I don't...
And I think the only player who's looked really confident in right field, like Bellinger has, but you want him in center if he's playing at all, is Billy McKinney. And ideally, Billy McKinney is not starting.
Doesn't play. Yeah. Yeah. So...
You want Mookie and Wright. We're just going to do roster, right? We're not going to do the actual lineup order.
I just think, like, the main thing for me is... I think once Mookie's back, it allows you to sit Bellinger more often.
Yep.
And you're always going to get one of essentially Pollock or, I guess, Taylor or whoever's resting between, like, Justin Turner probably gets a day off a week now the rest of the year.
But let's say this. Let's say the pitcher has no discernible splits one way or the other. It's an anonymous pitcher.
Right.
What is your starting roster? Let's see if we disagree at all. I don't think we will, but
so
because I think it's a pretty clear to me. It's a pretty clear roster.
I especially at this point, like, no discernible pitcher is weird, but like I don't think you ever start Bellinger against the lefty.
Yep.
Right now, but like if it comes down to it, like Bellinger. Starts maybe like a third of the time.
That sounds about right to me.
Yeah.
I think in the regular season, like you said, it will wash out where he's starting almost all the time because somebody is going to get a day off. And because you have the glue of this franchise, Chris Taylor, you can make that work. No matter who's sitting, because Chris Taylor can play, you can get Cody Bellinger in the lineup. Now, that said, if the playoff game was tomorrow, you need to submit a roster before you knew a pitcher. Again, weird hypothetical. I'll go through the roster and you tell me if you disagree.
Okay.
AJ Pollock in left.
Yep.
Chris Taylor in center.
Okay.
Mookie Betts in right.
Sure.
Justin Turner at third.
Yep.
Corey Seager at short. You could argue that.
Hold on. Yeah.
I think at that point. Corey Seager is not your best defensive shortstop, but he has not played anywhere else ever, so it's not.
He's played third, but like, I know what you mean. But he's not playing third.
Trey Turner at second.
Yeah.
Max Muncy at first.
Yep. I think it also gets to the point, just to bring this up, where you're at the point now where Pujols doesn't start even against lefties.
Yes.
Except, I guess. There could be an occasional situation, especially in the playoffs, they might do it, but it's the sense where they start him to get two at bats, and then whoever is the sitter comes in,
and then Max Muncy moves back to first. I could totally see it happening, especially if any of the other guys is going through a little bit of slump, Cody Bellinger has a really hot... September, and then things change around. But if the playoff game was tomorrow, and again, anonymous hitter, I think that's what you go. And then you have Bellinger as a great pitch inning / defensive replacement adjustment, great for a double switch situation. And you have Pujols as your great bat off the bench against a lefty. You've got a really solid lineup there.
It's a problem with Pujols because in the regular season, it could be a game where that's a Corey Seager rest day. It's an occasional Trey Turner rest day. It's a Justin Turner rest day. Max Muncy maybe even a rest day, although that's rare as well. But, like, you're not going to sit any of those four guys in the playoffs, right? So Pujols doesn't really start in the playoffs for me. And that's the only other guy who would really start, you know, I guess. But yeah, that's interesting. And then you're going to have games where, like, they'll put Bellinger in center and, like, Taylor in left, or and then sit Pollock for, like, you know, two out of six or something, like 2 out of 5, something like that, I would imagine. I'm with you. Okay. On that roster, yeah, for sure.
I'm gonna let you ask the next question because it's an interruption.
Yep. So questions from Craig has become questions from Ryan Walton, or a question from Ryan Walton. He's going on a family trip to Missouri next week and plans to see a game at Kauffman Stadium. He said, I'm not sure if Jacob has ever heard of this place, but we're eating at a place called Mac Cheesy, which, first of all, great name for a place, among other places. If Jacob has been, are there any recommendations? I'll be driving up to the Royals game from Brana. Is that the right way to pronounce that?
No idea.
Yeah, and wondered what I should eat on the way to the Royals game or after for the drive back. Look forward to hearing your suggestions.
So Mac Cheesy is in Joplin. I've never been to Joplin. I have a friend who is from Joplin. And so now that I know, if I ever go, if he ever visits back, I'll make sure he knows. And if I ever go, I'll go as well. Now, that said, where he's heading from, Kenneth Brana, is really close to Fort Scott, Kansas, which is actually where I did a mini vacation recently. So I actually have done that drive back up to Kansas City. So two stops on that drive. There's a few ways you can go, and so you'd have to pick a particular route. But Marsha's Great Plains Deli had one of the best sandwiches, just good cold cut, huge, huge sandwich I've ever had, and that's in Fort Scott. Miss B's Cafe was an excellent breakfast joint in Lewisburg. And then other than that, Kansas City has a great food scene. There's so much to do there, but since this is something you would just kind of tack on, you got to do the obvious thing, I think, and do barbecue. My Rex there, Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, formerly known as Oklahoma Joe's, is, in my opinion, the gold standard when it comes to KC barbecue. They are closed on Sundays. If the game you're going to is on a Sunday, you couldn't go, but otherwise, it's just phenomenal. Worth noting, you can call in an order and do a pickup, but if you wanted to avoid the fairly long lines, but I think it's worth going in. It's probably, there are three locations, two of which are in the suburbs. We're actually going to be probably a little bit more on the way. You'll pass through either the Olathe or the Leawood location. But I think it's worth going to the original, which is in a gas station. It's got that really, you're eating at a gas station vibe. And that's... that's in Kansas City, Kansas, close-ish to downtown.
That's Joe's. That's the one you sent me.
Christmas. I sent you a. Yeah. They're known for. I think they do everything very well, but thanks in large part to Paul Rudd, the Z-Man sandwiches.
Hmm.
Certainly, their probably most famous sandwich, and I sent you a Z-Man kit. I think.
It's always hit or miss on stuff that's like through the mail like that.
Yep.
But having, I mean, it's in like a resealable frozen pack and you basically just, boil it, to heat it and it tastes really good.
Yep.
Like, you know, weeks after the fact and it's excellent. So yeah, I can't imagine what it would be like fresh, that day. So like, yeah, I'm with you on that.
If for whatever you're going on a Sunday, the other barbecue places I would recommend are Slaps and, Q39, which is a more of a sit down, vibe. So if you wanted the more sit down option, that's another good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we have one more question from Greg.
Okay.
As you know, due to know, I am encamped in Portland this week, so my food question is inspired by this location. I had a crispy mortadella sandwich at Lardo, and we'll get their version of cheesesteak at some point, a sandwich that I think I've mentioned on air before. Maybe the best sandwich I've ever had is the cheesesteak available at Lardo. And I wanted to know if you ever cooked or heated up deli or luncheon meat for your sandwiches growing up. I remember doing this in particular with the Oscar Mayer brand, with the circular meat rising into a little dome shape. My mom did this. She would microwave bologna, and that smell is still scarred in my brain. And this is someone who likes bologna and likes microwaving things generally. And the two shall not meet in my head. And now that said, I have had a, I don't know if I would call it crispy, but certainly hot mortadella sandwich. There's a Cajun place here in town in Lawrence that has it, and it is phenomenal. It is so good. So clearly there is a right way to do that, but now I can't not think of crispy Oscar Mayer bologna, and I'm a little grossed out.
So I don't remember doing that as a kid. I think I've done it more as an adult, just like, I don't know, it's worked with like, I used to do this with like luncheon meat, let's say, that was been in the fridge a little too long and maybe had a weird smell to it. Yeah, you know what, I'm just going to cook the nastiness out of this and, you know, throw it on the grill and then just throw some cheese over it. And then that's the sandwich. But like, yeah, I don't remember doing that as a kid. I've never done the bologna thing, but that sounds so gross. I like it just generally, like, but yeah, I don't remember ever doing it as a kid. I don't remember how often what age I started like using the stove. I'm trying to remember that. But like, I was usually like, too much work. I'm just going to slap raw, you know, meat on this piece of bread and eat it. And then don't have to do an extra step. That was sort of my path back then. But yeah, that's kind of it.
I'm going to push the bologna thing out of my head and instead just think of lardo and mortadella and get hungry again.
Craig sent us a text yesterday from Lardo and just with the outside of the restaurant. So just look at that picture and then be inspired, and then you'll think of good sandwiches and not bad. So that's about it for us this week. Go out there, eat a good sandwich, whether it's heated or not, and we'll be back next week with even more Dodgers news. Thanks for listening, everybody.